This is the Auntie M Brain Tumors Talk Show. It's a show full of informative chat and inspirational messages. The Auntie M Brain Tumors Talk Show on podcast. Hello, welcome to Auntie M Brain Tumors Talk Show. I'm your host, Claire, and we've got an important mission this month. It is Brain Tumor Awareness Month, and we're shedding light on a crucial issue. Brain tumors claim more lives among children and adults under 40 than any other cancer. Shockingly, only 1% of the national spend on cancer research is allocated to this silent threat. Because today, right here on Auntie M Brain Tumors Talk Show, we're taking a stand. We're not just talking statistics. We're sharing stories, real heartfelt stories from people all around the globe who have been touched by a brain tumor. It's time to raise our voices and spread the word. By listening in, you're joining a movement to make a difference. So today I'll be speaking to Henna and I'll just give her a call.
Hello.
Hi, Henna. Thank you that you wanted to share your experience and your story and then be a part of Brain Tumor Awareness Month.
Yeah, of course. I'm always happy to, especially as a relatively young person. I think that we young people don't always think that these things happen to us. And I think it's important to be aware of the symptoms and be aware that it's a possibility.
Yeah. Should we go back to the beginning where you started feeling symptoms? What kind of symptoms did you have?
Yeah. So I'd had occasional migraines over the years, the kind of migraine that happens every few months that you don't think too much about it. It just happens and you think that like I'm dehydrated or whatever. At one point, sort of late 2020, they started getting more regular and they started getting more severe. So I started having the kind of migraines that I had to actually properly lay down in a dark room for several hours. And I knew that I was not functional. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I then started thinking that, oh, I need to go to the doctors because this is not normal anymore. So eventually, I think it was about January, February 2021, just before COVID started, when I first went to my GP to basically say that I'm having really bad migraines. They come with like sort of visual aura. They come with a bit of dizziness and things like that. And it's getting more frequent now that I think there's something wrong. It's definitely getting worse than what it was before. So that's how it initially started. I was diagnosed. I was told that it's just migraines because as a woman, the first thing they suspected was hormones. So I was on hormonal contraceptives at the time that I had been using for over 10 years at that point. But they said that I need to stop them because sometimes they can cause migraines, even though I did question that. I've used them for a long time. Why would they now suddenly cause migraines? And apparently that does happen. Mm. So the first solution was simply to move on to different like contraceptive style hormonal and telling me to come back in 3 months' time if that doesn't work. And that kind of then put me into this cycle of for about a year and a half where I was always, they stuck with the diagnosis. It's migraine, it's stress. We ended up having the COVID-like lockdown, something's happening at the same time then. And every time I saw the doctors, they gave me new painkillers or new sort of medication or something. At one point, they told me to go out more and exercise more and always told me that if it doesn't work, come back in 3 months' time. And every single time, even if I had some small relief for a little while, the symptoms got worse or they didn't go anywhere and I started getting new symptoms. So every single time I went back to complain again, but I was never sent for a scan. And I don't think I was ever, apart from the first appointment, I was never seen face to face. So I only got phone appointments, which I think also made a difference because especially towards the like later times, like I think that if a doctor would have actually seen me in person, I think they would have realized that I'm not well.
Yeah.
There's something wrong with this person.
I think it was just the worst thing to be ill through the COVID and the lockdowns because all those restrictions we had was just, it felt so mean for all the people that suffered longer than they needed to.
And I think that also made the diagnosis harder in the sense that there was a lot of talk about lockdown fatigues, for example. And obviously the pandemic did have an impact on people. I'm sure it had an impact on me. I often say that I think what probably happened is that the sort of symptoms made my brain tumor symptoms worse and my brain tumor symptoms made my lockdown symptoms worse. It was a bit of a perfect combination of things.
Yeah.
And it was easy for doctors to, especially because brain tumors, the symptoms can be things like fatigue and emotional like drain and things like that. And those were really easy to claim.
Yeah.
So the pandemic and the lockdowns.
So you waited a year of having all this. Was it a year until you went to the optician?
Yeah, so it was almost a year and a half. So like I said, I think January 2021 was around that time was the first time I went to a GP. And eventually I think it was 2020, wasn't it, pandemic? Eventually then on May, the following year in May, I had a normal sort of routine, like eye check invitation, just every 2 years you get an invite to come check your eyesight. And I wanted to get new glasses, so I was like, I might as well go. And I went there, and the optician, at one point they take the pictures from behind your eyes and all this fancy stuff. And the optician said that, like, she's going to just go, like, talk to a colleague.
Oh, gosh.
And she came back and said that she's actually going to refer me to the hospital. And she didn't say anything about, like, brain tumors or anything like that. But she was clearly, like, she said that, like, she's going to, it was a Saturday, and she said that she's going to refer me to the hospital the same day. And I was a bit like, oh, is it, like, should I just call them and get an appointment or something? And she said that, no, actually, she's going to refer me to the hospital. If they don't call me back within 2 hours, just go to the A&E.
Yeah.
Which made me feel a bit like, oh, okay.
Yeah, completely unexpected.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was then, you know, waiting for the call from the hospital, but I didn't get one. So I went to the A&E, and my local hospital said that they actually don't have anyone, like an eye specialist, working that day. So that's why no one's called me. And they said that I might as well go to St. George's, because they have the Moorfields Eye Center, because all the A&E doctor is going to do is say that they're not a specialist and they can refer me to St. George's anyways. There's no point in me queuing up in the A&E. I might as well go straight up and queue up in another A&E.
Yeah.
So yeah, I went to Moorfields on the same day, Saturday, and I got into the eye clinic, and they did all the checks, and they confirmed what the optician said, that I had a swollen optic nerve in my left eye. And they did all kinds of tests and asked me about my background. So I did tell about, like, my migraines and things like that. And they actually told me that they have no reason to suspect that there's, like, a mass or anything serious causing the symptoms. They said to me that if they thought that there was something, like, serious going on, they would refer me to the scan on the same day. But instead, they said that they're going to refer me to the outpatient, like, neuro department. So I was pretty much told that, even though I was a bit worried, I was pretty much told at the eye clinic, like, don't worry, it's nothing serious, which in hindsight is not great.
Did you have to do this on your own?
I was with my husband, so my husband drove me to the hospital and he was there with me. Like, yeah. What I remember is that they specifically told me that there's no reason to think that it's anything serious. Ugh. And they're just going to refer me to an appointment at the neuro department. So yeah, I went home thinking that, like, okay, something's wrong, but at least it's not serious, basically.
Yeah. So did they send you a letter?
But yeah, then I got an appointment. Mm. Yeah, so I got an appointment letter then for the, I think it was in 2 weeks' time, I had an appointment at the outpatient neurological department, where, again, I talked to a doctor who asked the same questions, looked at what the eye clinic had written down, asked about my background and things like that. And they, again, this is absolutely ridiculous when I think about it in hindsight. Again, I was told that she diagnosed me as having just pressure on my brain for unknown reasons, basically, because I'm a female. It's apparently common with young females. And because I had put on weight during lockdown. And apparently sometimes when you put on weight on, like, quite quickly, your brain can't keep up or something, which then develops pressure on your brain. And she again told me that she's going to refer me to a lumbar puncture, where they're going to release the pressure, and then it might just be a case of medication, but again, it's nothing too serious. And she said that, again, that there's no reason to think that it's anything more serious than that. And she said that she will refer me for an MRI, but only because it's routine in these cases and she has to.
When they said they were going to,
for the second time, I was basically told that.
Brushing it off again. Okay. Yeah. When you had that, when they said, "Oh, we might do a lumbar puncture thingy," was that the one where it goes down your spine?
Lumbar puncture.
Well, does it go down the spine?
Yeah. So I had an appointment for lumbar. Yeah, they put, like, a needle in your spine. So I had an appointment for lumbar puncture then the following week, where they measure the pressure in your spine and they take out some of the spinal fluid, I think it's called, which then lowers the pressure. So that would have basically been the treatment for what they suspected I have, and brought my pressure in my brain to a normal level again. So I had that procedure done, but obviously it didn't help, because that wasn't the actual reason for the pressure. The reason was that I had a massive brain tumor. But I then got quite severe side effects from the lumbar puncture, which took me to hospital. So you can get sometimes this pressure headache.
Yeah.
Which meant that I wasn't able to get out of bed at all. So I was laying flat. As soon as I got home from the hospital, it was just a day procedure, and I went back home after. But as soon as I went home, I was laying flat in my bed in pain. I couldn't move my head. I couldn't lift my head. And the next day, my husband then had to take me or call an ambulance to take me to the hospital because I was unable to move completely.
And what happened at the
end? So then when I was at the hospital,
yeah.
I was there for about a week, and then eventually I had the scan that was scheduled whilst I was in the hospital already, and that then revealed that
did you have to wait
a huge brain tumor.
How long did you have to wait for the MRI to come through?
So I still, even though I went to the hospital, so I was taken into a general medical ward as like a pain patient, and I think they probably just don't communicate really well in hospital. So I wasn't, again, I wasn't sent straight into a scanner or anything. I was in hospital. I remember that I went in there on Tuesday. The lumbar bugs was on Monday. On Tuesday, I was taken to the hospital. And I eventually had the scan the following week, Monday. So I was there for a week already at that point. So I only had the scan at the same time. It was actually scheduled anyway. So they didn't in any way accelerate it or anything, even though I was there as a sort of neurological patient. So even then it took a while before.
That just sounds like a bit of a mess, like the way that all happened.
Yeah, It does. I think the problem at that point was that even though I was a neuro patient technically and I was sent to the lumbar puncture as a neuro patient, I went to the A&E as a pain patient. So I was put in general medical ward, and I do remember that I had neuro doctors come and see me, but I think that there was just some thing where things don't quite link up, so they didn't really realize that maybe there's something else that's wrong with me. Maybe it's just not a side effect from the lumbar puncture. Maybe it's actually I should be sent for a scan immediately.
Yeah.
But luckily I had been scheduled for the scan because then I did have it eventually.
So you've had that 7-day wait and they did a proper scan and then they found the tumor.
Yeah, so I was wheeled into the scan because I was still at the point where I couldn't lift my head even from the bed. So I was wheeled into the scan. I had an MRI. I don't remember much about it because at that point I had been in hospital for a week, and you know what it's like being in hospital. You lose all
sense of yourself when
you're... Exactly. I just remember vaguely. I have like vague memories of being in an MRI machine. And then later in the evening at like about 7 o'clock, a doctor came to my bed and told me that unfortunately they found a huge brain tumor. And I think what's funny is that my first question, it was that because I was so fed up of being in the hospital at that point because I was just so done with it. I think my first question was that like, oh God, does that mean that I'm going to spend my whole summer in hospital? Because this was late May when this happened.
Yeah.
And he looked a bit confused, and I just remember the look in his face, and it's probably not the first question you expect from a brain tumor patient. And he just looked a bit confused and said, oh, no, it'll just be like a few days or something. And I was like, okay, that's fine. Which is... Probably not the normal reaction. Yeah, but anyway, being told that you have a brain tumor.
Yeah, but you never know what you're going to react when you hear something like that. Just
and as I said, I was so out of it.
Yeah, and you're in shock as well. You're not quite sure what to say. You're trying to take it in. Yeah,
totally.
That sounds so awful. The way that this all kind of got finally diagnosed.
Yeah,
but thank goodness it was diagnosed.
At the point where. Yeah, absolutely. And when I got diagnosed, I remember that the doctor told me that they think that it's like low grade based on the location and the way it looks. And they think that they can just operate it, so they will put me in for surgery. So there was it was such a big tumor already at that point that there was no conversation about any treatment options. It was just surgery as soon as possible. Mm. And what was hard about that was that it was, again, during lockdowns, during COVID. So I wasn't allowed any visitors. So already whilst I was at the hospital, like I said, I'd been there for a week. My husband wasn't allowed to visit me. So I was on my own. And again, as I was diagnosed, I had no one with me. So all I could do was afterwards, I called my husband to say that, okay, I've been diagnosed with a brain tumor, and which is quite horrible. And then the next day, my husband had called the ward to basically say that my wife's there. She's been diagnosed with a brain tumor. Can he come and visit me? And they said that no, because of COVID and the restrictions, you aren't allowed to visit.
Yeah.
So I was still just alone. The hospital.
Did they have anyone come and speak to you? Because I know a lot of other people said that unfortunately they also had it through the lockdown, haven't? And only one person said that they sent them a psychologist to come and have a chat. And did you get that?
No, I didn't. So I was told in the evening, which also slightly, like all the staff were absolutely lovely. So I'm not in any way criticizing any like staff that I dealt with. They were all amazing. But I also, again, I don't know, was it necessary to come tell me 7 o'clock in the evening? Like you probably could have just, I wasn't going anywhere. I was in the hospital. You probably could have waited till the morning. Mm. And again, I didn't have anyone come to talk to me. So the next day I then had a sort of surgical team come and see me and tell me that I've been booked in for surgery and ask a lot of questions about like symptoms and things like that. Mm. I didn't have at any point anyone talk about any like psychological effects. I didn't have anyone, for example, call my husband. So the only person who called my husband was me, myself.
Yeah.
That's it. And so he didn't get a lot of information because I was quite sleep deprived and out of it at the time. So I basically just told him that I've got a brain tumor and they will operate it. And that's all I know.
Yeah.
I had on the day that I then got out of the hospital a couple of days later, I had an occupational therapist come and see me just to assess my walking and movement after I'd been bedbound for a week. And he was the one person who actually had a really lovely conversation with me about how I feel. He was asking about my symptoms and like how I've been coping at home and if I need any help. And he asked me if anyone's called my husband. And I said that I assume not. And he said that he would do that. And he actually, the therapist, called my husband. And my husband said that it was a really lovely phone call. He was the only person from the hospital that he talked with. And he was just really nice.
Yeah.
And it was really assuring for him to have someone call him, even though he wasn't a doctor like he probably should have been.
Yeah. Oh, it just feels like that was just so unfortunate that this all happened at this time. Like I don't think people get quite as like to be just left like this. I think that was just really bad timing. And that's
it definitely was.
I would have been so scared not having anyone with me. I just would have been really like, I want to talk to somebody. And can you imagine if we didn't have the mobiles? It'd be even worse.
I know. And I didn't really think much about it at the time because I was in shock and I was just taking it as it was. But especially afterwards, I've been really quite mad about the way it was treated, that I wasn't allowed for anyone to come see me, for example, because I was in a general ward with other patients and there were a couple of dementia patients and they were allowed to have visitors because dementia, and of course dementia is serious, I understand that, so they should be allowed people coming to visit them. But it's a bit like, where do you draw the line?
Yeah.
Who's allowed visitors and who isn't? You would think that if you are diagnosed with a brain tumor, you would be allowed for your family member to come and see you.
I suppose in your head you
10 minutes with a mask on.
Yeah, you didn't know exactly how this whole would work, how it would work out, do you? You don't, all you hear is brain tumor and you think, oh my gosh, am I going to die?
Yeah.
You can't help it. You just think it sounds like the worst. So in your head, you must have thought, I need somebody. And I can see why you'd be like, you needed somebody. And I just feel so bad for people that had this through lockdown. It's bad enough without lockdown, but to have all that sort of horrible.
Absolutely. And I feel it's also awful for other people, like my family members and my husband, who also, when they get a call from me from the hospital, say that I'm brain tumor, but there's nothing they can do about it. They're not allowed to come and see me. They can't give me a hug. They don't even know how I look. I've been in hospital for a week at that point. Like, they don't even know what condition I am and like how am I doing. All they get is like regular updates from me once in a while, and that's it.
Yeah, other than your husband, do you have any other family over here in the UK?
No, I don't. So my family's in Finland.
Oh, gosh. So did they get to come?
So my parents and my brothers live in Finland.
Yeah, and I suppose they wouldn't have been able to get here.
They didn't come to the UK because I said, I said that there's no point coming because they aren't allowed in the hospital anyway. And also my mum's got also some health issues with her back and so on. So traveling is quite like draining for her. So I said that it's fine, we'll do. I called her daily and we did video calls and things, but I said this because they aren't allowed to be in the hospital. Yeah. So there's no point coming.
So how long did you have to stay in hospital after the surgery?
After the surgery. So I had a surgery then less than 2 weeks after my diagnosis. I got to go home in between. So I had a sort of week and a half, my husband just doing nothing, getting ready for the surgery. After surgery, so I had the surgery on Friday, June 4th, and I got home on the Wednesday the following week.
So I did get
to go home in between. So they allowed me to go home and said to just enjoy life. It's a bit of a sort of doomy.
Yeah, because you don't know what you're doing.
Now that I think about it, but this is the...
Yeah, you don't know what's happening.
Yeah, and you're just waiting for a surgery.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like waiting for this deadline of...
Did you look for some kind of support for brain tumor patients? Or did you just think, I don't know what to do with myself and you just didn't do anything? Or did you find something?
I didn't at that point. So I think I was in semi-denial, but also in a kind of, I'm quite like an action-oriented person. So I think my approach to it was that like, okay, I have a brain tumor. I'm going to have surgery. We're going to sort it out. So I just need to get there. And a lot of people around me have said afterwards that it was really weird because I was just acting like quite normal. And even when I was in the hospital, it was my birthday around the same time I was diagnosed. I was supposed to go to a bottomless brunch with some of my friends. And this was after I was already diagnosed and I eventually then got home. We were supposed to go for the brunch the following weekend. And I just kept telling them, yeah, I'm going home now. It's fine. Like, we can do the brunch. And they were like, you have that friend doing henna. Should we just do something different? Like, maybe we'll just come see you. And I was like, oh, that's really boring. Like, we should do the brunch. And I was like in a bit of a denial,
yeah,
trying to like continue with my life. I think it's part of it is shock and part of it is just being in a bit of denial and just wanting to crack on with life. But afterwards, I think the actual emotional impact has only come on after the physical recovery and the physical side of the whole ordeal.
Good. Have you had anything different to what you were before? Physically or
mentally? I noticed on the mental side. So physically, I got really lucky. So I appreciate that like a lot of people have long-term impact from brain tumors because it's really complex. And mine was really quite huge. So it's surprising that I didn't have any seizures or any like permanent damage. But I had a successful surgery where they got all of it out. So I didn't need to have any like radiotherapy or medication or anything afterwards. And I recovered fairly well physically. So I didn't have any impact from the surgery. Of course, like it took me a while to get back to strength. Like when I got home from the hospital, I was so weak that I struggled walking to our third floor flat. So my husband had to support me. And I started doing small exercises of just walking at home and then going out and walking around one block.
Did you find that
my husband holds my hands? And
because you'd been in hospital for so long, because I had this problem, I was in there for 17 days. And so when I came out and I had to go up the stairs to get to my room, I couldn't get up the stairs. I felt like my legs were like, they just didn't do it. And I was like, what's wrong with these legs? And they were just had no strength.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was really weak. And I also remember that I think there was a bit of a, I had to refigure the coordination between my legs and my brain. So when I went for a walk, sometimes when you walk and you almost like you think that your foot hits the ground earlier than it actually does or something like that. Yeah. And I, at first when I started walking, I was a bit wobbly. I think my brain was just like figuring things out again and recovering. So I had to be a bit careful when I was walking because I sometimes just might have like accidentally tripping my own feet or something. So it took a little while. So I had to be really careful. That's why I only walked with my husband with me, so he was holding my hand or he was walking next to me and I was walking like really step by step really slowly. So this was my first initial recovery process of just slowly trying to get back to normal fitness and feeling normal in that sense.
Were you able to go back to work or were you working from home?
So we were working from home at the moment before I went on sick leave. I was assigned 8 weeks of sick leave, so I was supposed to go back to work in at some point August. I did actually return a week earlier, so I went back to work after 7 weeks because I felt physically fine and I got really bored at home.
Yeah.
I'm the kind of person who likes to do a lot of things. So at that point, when I started feeling physically normal, I was thinking that I can't do this anymore. I've spent the whole summer home. I need to start working again. So I worked from home. Of course, I didn't straight away go to the office, but I did go back to work fairly quickly.
The only side effect you were saying is just that you felt there was no support for you and you've this thing happened and then it was as if you were meant to go back to normal and you were like, hang on a minute, I was something, you want to talk about it. Yeah,
so I think at the time I thought I was back to normal, but in hindsight I definitely wasn't. So as I said, I think I was really focused on the physical recovery to begin with, and when I was physically, I felt physically recovered. So by the end of my sick leave I was going on daily walks of 6 miles even. And I was really focused on like getting back to fitness, getting back to like physically fine. And I think that I thought that once I'm physically recovered, that's it. And what I didn't realize is that brain doesn't recover at the same speed. They've taken a huge tumor out of my brain. It's like slowly growing back to, or getting, taking the space back, readjusting, figuring things out. So I went back to work and I thought that this is, I'm back to normal now. And I think a lot of people around me also thought that, okay, she's back now and things are back to normal. And of course, I, in many ways, seemed like I was back to normal. But then in the next few months, I started getting more emotional symptoms. So I was quite emotionally unstable, I would say. So I, for example, cried really easily.
Yeah.
I've never been an emotional person, especially, but suddenly I was the kind of person who cried over anything, any kind of little obstacle in life. I would cry. I would be quite like just unstable and feel quite emotionally unwell, a bit like just not myself.
Mm.
And I did then eventually, towards the end of the year, refer myself to counseling. So I had a health plan at my work and I got counseled through there. And the counseling was really helpful at the time because the person said to me that what I'm experiencing now is shock. And she said that quite often when something like this happens to you, you are so focused, your mind is focused on the physical recovery and the shock only comes later on when you're physically fine and your mind has the sort of capacity to actually process what's happened. And that's why it felt at the time, it felt almost like unfair, because my mindset was that I've recovered. I've already recovered. Like, why am I feeling like this now? Why can't I just be normal? And when I was in counseling, I remember that I kept saying to the counselor when I was talking with her about like, oh, it's already been 6 months. And she kept saying to me that 6 months is not a long time. You keep talking like this is ancient history. It isn't. You had a brain tumor. 6 months is absolutely nothing. And for me at the time, it felt really unfair that I was still going through this. But then ever since then, I've gone through this almost like cycle where I'm still recovering. And I keep thinking at times that like, okay, I'm back to normal now. I even said to people that, yeah, I'm back to normal now. And then a few months later, I've realized that I definitely wasn't back to normal, but now I'm back to normal. And then again, later on, I realized that no, I still wasn't. So it takes time. And I think it's really difficult to understand the way your brain recovers because it's not as simple as having a cast in your arm and then it's taken out and then you're fine. And I think it's difficult when I don't know what normal is, because I was in my early 30s when I was diagnosed, and the brain tumor I had was one of those ones that grows really slowly, and it starts actually only causing significant physical symptoms once it's large. Mm. So in the last couple of years that I had the symptoms, that's when it was large enough to actually cause the migraines and cause the like dizziness and like things that I had. But it had been, the estimate is that it started growing probably at least 7 or 8 years before it was found, which actually means that most of my adult life, I had a brain tumor in my head. And even if it's small enough that it doesn't cause significant physical symptoms, it's still a brain tumor. It's still an external thing in your brain that is pushing your buttons and like impacting your brain and your mind.
Where you've had the counseling, did you say that to the counselor, and how did she give you some sort of like way of thinking about it? I know they don't tend to say everything, they just listen, but did she give you any good tools?
I didn't at the time, because also the counseling that I had at the time, they weren't experts in neuropsychology. Yeah. So it was just a normal counselor that I got through my work health plan, it was still helpful, but there was still some gaps. And I don't think I had like quite figured this out yet at that point. But later on, as I've recovered and waited for myself, I'm like expecting like, when am I back to normal? When can I say that I've fully recovered? And then I realized that how do I know that? Because I don't know what normal is, because I don't know what sort of impact the brain tumor has had on me over the years. I don't know what is my normal personality without a brain tumor. Mm. And I don't know how much it has impacted me over the years as it was growing, and I didn't know it was there. So I don't have the baseline to know that, okay, this is now, I'm there. And I don't think that I can't ever say that I'm fully recovered or not. Like probably, I'm sure that my brain is probably back to normal by now in that sense. But I think it's an ongoing process for myself to figure out that.
Yeah.
When do I think that I'm back to being me?
Yeah. Yeah. It's
which is quite hard.
Yeah, it's up to you. It's your body that's going to go. Yeah, it is. It's down to your journey. It's like you're the only one that can answer that question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And because it's my mind, and it's given me almost this like existential crisis. Like I don't have any regrets about my life. Like I've had a great life and I like where I'm in my life, but it's made me question that, would my life be different if I didn't have the brain tumor? How much has it actually impacted the choices I've made? I've had quite a, I say adventurous, my mom would say restless life. I've traveled a lot. I live in another country than where I grew up. Like I've decided to move abroad. I've studied abroad. I've done internships abroad. I've been like constantly on the move. People not being able to keep up with me. And I'm glad I have a life like that. As I said, I've got no regrets, but I think it makes me think that has, for example, did the brain tumor over the years, did make me more impulsive, didn't make me more prone to making these kind of decisions where I decide to move country suddenly or decide to do this and that and be constantly on the move, or would I have made those choices anyway? It makes me question that, would I actually... in the same place I am in life?
Yeah, but I would think, do you regret all the things you've done? Because it sounds like you've done some amazing stuff.
Yeah, I don't. So that's the thing. So that I think that's why I'm fine with it. I think it would be harder if I actually wasn't happy with my life, because then it would give you a lot of questions about you might feel angry about having had a brain tumor.
Have you been able to meet anybody else that's had a brain tumor? Have you found someone that you could talk about?
I am lucky enough that I met someone when I was in hospital after my surgery. So there was another girl in the same ward with me recovering from her surgery. And we had a little chat when we were there. So St. George's, I don't know if you were the same ward where I was, but they had like patio area, a nice outdoor area. And it was quite nice and warm at the time. So a lot of the patients sat outside, and I had a few conversations with different patients, and this one girl, we were talking, and we actually exchanged numbers whilst we were there, and we've kept in touch since then. So I only just saw her again a few weeks ago. We both live in London, and we have talked a lot about brain tumor. So it's really different talking to someone who's also gone through the same journey, even though it's slightly different tumors and slightly different experiences, but the same symptoms and the same questions and the same challenges.
Yeah.
Even at the hospital after surgeries, I remember that we relied on each other. We were shyly asking that, do you like when you close your eyes? Do you get flashing lights? Do you think that's normal? And then the other person goes, I do get that also. And then we're both like, okay, it's probably normal
it
then.
It does help to hear someone else has the same as you. So you don't feel, it's not some, you don't want them to be in discomfort in any way, but you're like, I'm glad it's not just me.
Exactly. And there's a lot of weird things that happen in your head and your body after a brain surgery, and no one really talks to you about those things in detail.
Yeah.
So it's a bit weird when you're, especially when you get home and then things happen and you think that, okay, is this part of it or should I call the hospital? And I spent, especially the first couple of weeks when I was home after surgery, I spent so much time on Google, just Googling different things and trying to figure out what's happening in my body. Is it normal or is it a symptom of something? Do I need to call the hospital? Mm. And usually it was fine. There was all these things clicking in your head and stuff like that you would not expect to happen.
Do you know, they have certain charities, I don't know all of them, but I know one specifically, that Brains Trust do have counselling, that it's free counselling, and it's for if you've had brain, what you've gone through, so you can talk to somebody. I don't know if you've come across Brains Trust before.
Yeah, I have. I've had a look at them, and I think Brain Tumor Charity also has something, and I've considered that I probably should refer myself to something like that, because I think it would be really helpful, even if...
Yeah, it makes such a difference to talk to someone
that
understands a bit more and can just be on your same wavelength to give their point of view. And it does help. I used to keep everything to myself because I was quite young and I just wanted to forget about it and go back to my life. But actually it was pretty hard to do that. So I eventually had to say, okay, I need to speak to somebody. And it helped. I think it takes a while to find the right person to speak to. You might come across some that aren't very helpful, but just keep trying and find your person that is your go-to when you need to talk. And it does help.
Yeah. No, I feel the same. And I think the first year after my brain tumor, I think I was so focused on just being back to normal that I just constantly tried to convince everybody around me that I'm fine. And I didn't want to talk more about brain tumor because I didn't want to be known as the brain tumor girl, or I didn't want to be people to, I didn't want it to become a personal trait. I was I had a brain tumor, but I'm normal. I'm fine. But since then, I think I've realized that actually I need to talk about it, and I want to talk about it openly. I want to talk about my challenges openly because I want people around me to also understand that you don't shake off a brain tumor like a cold. It's yes, I have recovered and I'm fine, but also it has an impact on me.
Yeah.
And that's absolutely fine.
Yeah, it is. It's
someone needs
life
to recover
changing.
From brain tumor in a few months.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's still something I'm processing.
I think it's okay to be in denial. Yeah, I think it's okay to be in denial for a while. That is, do what you've got to do, but then do find someone to talk to so you can just make sure that you're okay.
Yeah, exactly. I think it was good for me in a weird way to be in denial to begin with because it allowed me to focus on the physical recovery and it allowed me to just think that I'll be fine without harming the process by myself, by understanding how serious this was. I think it was good for me, but then after I was physically fine, I think it's important to shake off the denial and actually accept that this is
huge.
Because if you don't accept it, you don't deal with the shock. And
that's
you don't
really
deal
interesting.
With the trauma
that's really
that it leaves.
Yeah, it's really interesting how you say that because I did the same thing. I brushed it off for about 3 years, but then I was like, I want to talk to somebody now. I was like, I've been in denial. I've made out I'm absolutely fine and I wasn't fine. And I had so many problems that I was trying to be in denial. Like I can't see properly and I was like, oh, it's fine. And just trying to live with it. But then I was like, oh, I don't have to be like this. I can go and find some more. And it took a while to have the confidence to talk to people about it without feeling, oh yeah, I'm needy, like I need help. And then I was like, it took me a while to accept that it's okay to ask for some help.
You know what, the word needy really hits, because it's also, like I said, that I feel really lucky that I recovered so well physically, because I know that a lot of people do have long-term symptoms, and I feel that I'm really privileged in the way that I can say that I've recovered fully, and people wouldn't know that I've had a brain tumor. It doesn't impact my life in that sense. I can do normal things. And then I almost feel like guilty that, why do I still feel like I need help, or why am I still complaining, or why am I still talking about this? Because I think, I feel like it's unfair for those people who actually have severe symptoms and severe, like their life has changed significantly because of the brain tumor. They can't do normal things, they can't go to work or things. Like, it feels like I'm not allowed, I shouldn't be like allowed to feel bad because I've recovered. But actually, that's not the case. I am.
Well,
it's still
think
emotional trauma.
Yeah, I think it's
bad also.
Yeah, it's an emotional trauma. And I agree. You'll find somebody who they're in a wheelchair, but you know what? You would never know that they felt sorry for themselves. They just get on with it and they just get on with it. And they don't moan or anything. They don't show any sign. And they are doing really well. And then you've got somebody who you can't see them in a wheelchair, but they are mentally had a real struggle with things.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's okay to feel like that. We're all made differently.
Exactly. And I still sometimes find myself saying things that if, for example, someone new finds out that I have a brain tumor, or I mentioned that I had a brain tumor, and of course it's people are always like, oh my god, a brain tumor, and I always find myself downplaying it. I'm always saying that, oh, but it was low grade, it wasn't cancerous, it's fine, I've recovered. And then I'm like, I shouldn't say that. It doesn't, just because it wasn't cancerous and just because I've recovered doesn't mean that it was a small thing. It's still serious. Yeah. I'm still allowed to.
You just have to find your people.
Make it a big deal.
Yeah, but you need to find your people. I always say this all the time. Like, we have to find our people. So you don't need to necessarily go to someone that they have cancer. They're going through a completely different stage. Mm. It's completely different. But you do want to find people who have gone through a life-changing experience that have rocked your emotions. And you want to find those people who had a brain tumor that they've had it removed, and yet they're doing really well, but there's something still that they're struggling with, and they're your people you want to find. And there are plenty of us who
absolutely
look great but need to talk, and but don't try and hide it. Gosh, no, like, you've been through something massive. Find your people. That's what I always say.
No,
find your people.
Absolutely.
Find me.
I probably bang on about it too much nowadays. People get annoyed with me.
We're a similar age, you and I, so I'm one of your people.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, that's perfect. Yeah. Amazing.
And we went to the same doctor. We went to the same hospitals. We're obviously in the same area.
Oh, yeah.
I will head you. I will send you some places that, you know, where I know there's some stuff going on, where Brains Trust again do local stuff.
Oh, amazing. Yeah.
I'll send it to you. But don't try and do it on your
own. I need to find my...
Your people.
I need to find my brain tumor
exactly.
crew.
I always think, it's if people have babies, they have their people. It's like their baby mums.
Oh, that sounds amazing. That's basically what I do with my one brain tumor mate. We always talk about brain tumors and how emotionally unstable we are and stuff like that when we're together, and it's really funny. We're both quite sarcastic people with dark sense of humor, so it's really funny when you can actually be open and share the experience with someone
and they get the joke.
Exactly, because they've gone through the same thing. And they can finish the joke when I start it. They can finish it because they know exactly what I'm talking about.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Do you think there's anything you would suggest to somebody else that they should maybe do if they were at that same stage that you went through? I know obviously we're not in a lockdown now, but is there something you wish you had originally that you would advise to somebody else?
I think it would be a really good idea early on in the process to talk to someone who's actually a specialist in like counseling in this area. And I think that hospitals should be able to sometimes refer you to counseling also, or like neuropsychology. I think not doing it the way I do, where you think that you're fine and then you start talking about it after, like later on, it probably slows you down. I think it would be better if you were able to talk to someone throughout the process, someone who understands the process and who understands how people recover from these kind of things, and who would be able to support you through the journey in a different way that your family and friends do, because they are not going through the journey in the same way. They don't understand what's happening in your head, and they don't understand the emotional toll, for example. Mm-hmm. I think it would be really important for people to seek professional support early on. Yeah. I think it would really help with recovery and probably help avoiding all the kind of existential questions that I am now asking myself 3 years later.
Do you have anyone that you want to say thank you to?
I think, obviously, I want to say a massive thank you to my husband. He's been brilliant. I know it was, especially in the early days, it was hard for him because he couldn't do anything. I was in denial. He had to just be there and watch me. He was feeling really upset. He was at home. I had an 11-hour brain surgery and he was at home waiting for the phone call from the hospital. And I know it's been like really hard, and he's been really supportive. He's been really understanding of my emotional fluctuation I've had over the months and years since then and the struggles I've been. And he's been always supportive. He's always helped me out. He's been really understanding. And it's just been a massive help for me throughout the journey to know that he's there.
Yeah.
He's not going to leave me just because I'm suddenly going to cry over or shout over something really stupid. He understands that it's part of the recovery and it is what it is.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, that's really lovely. We all need a husband like that. Not that I'm putting my husband down, he'd be the same, but you do need understanding, and it must be just as hard for them as it is for us, to be honest. And that's amazing. You had someone so supportive.
Absolutely.
That's really great. Do you remember who your surgeon was? I just wondered if we had the same.
It was Mr. Ioka, I think. Is that the way he's...
I don't know. I think someone else the other day had that. Because I'm always like, oh, did you have the same surgeon as me? But apparently nobody else has had the same surgeon as me. I'm like, so I always ask.
I still see him. Yeah, I still see him. He's been in my every annual checkup and he always remembers me, which is lovely. I really enjoy that. My husband always tells me, he's not going to remember you. He's got so many patients. You're just one patient amongst others. And one time, I think it was my second year, second annual checkup, I was in the queue at the reception and I had a face mask on. And he was coming to pick up another patient from the waiting room and he saw me in the queue and he winked and waved. And I was like, he does remember me.
Yeah, he remembers.
He knows exactly who I am.
that's nice.
Because it's always... it always makes you feel nice when they remember. It makes you feel a bit special, even though they obviously have a lot of patience. But I suppose the fact that I had such a huge tumor and I recovered so well, I think it was my checkup last year where he had the scan, the original scan with the brain tumor on screen, and he just looked at it and he said that, I can't believe you're just fine. It was so big. And I was like, I am. But it is nice that he remembers. It makes you feel a bit...
You're not just a paycheck.
Yeah, exactly. It makes you feel like they do care.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not just routine.
Yeah, exactly. Routine, exactly. That's the word I should have used. But thank you so much for taking the time to being a part of Brain Tumor Awareness Month.
This is the Auntie M Brain Tumor Talk Show.
Bye.
It's a show full of informative chat and inspirational messages. The Auntie M Brain Tumor Talk Show on podcast.